How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick. And as always, I'm joined by my good buddy, Ronald. But we have another mate joining us tonight. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How are we? Excited to be here and deep dive into the game. Not the best result, but...
What are you talking about? It was a brilliant result.
So for those who don't know, Dan is from Short Ball Rugby. I'm sure you guys know his page. You guys can check him out and we'll definitely pop the links up there as well after the show. But Dan is an All Blacks fan, and it actually makes me laugh because here we are without planning it, two of us in Bok jerseys and Dan in his All Blacks jersey. You know, we just had to pull that on each other, hey?
Yeah, I need to bring a friend here to even out the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, boys, it was a lacquer weekend of rugby. You guys are both over in the Northern Hemisphere behind enemy lines. Whilst I'm lacquer here in South Africa, close to the action. You know, what do we think of the weekend's game, Dan?
Pretty mixed feelings about this one. It was, it's a tricky one. We were pretty written off beforehand. Not many people were expecting us to go to Ellis Park. All the South Africans have been in my comments all week saying, you guys are the best in the world and they were going to get us. And then I was feeling confident. I thought we'd be able to pull it off. And then, 60 minutes we had it in the bag, and then you guys just came home strong and, showed your world-class team to steal it from us at the end. Yeah, there was a lot to be happy about from that game, but just let it slip at the end, which hurts.
It's interesting to hear you say that from your perspective, because I was sitting here thinking, shit, you know, we hurt the All Blacks in the World Cup. They're coming for us now. And let me tell you, those first 40 minutes, you guys really took us on. I was like, yep, this is the backlash that we've been waiting for. They've come here. They've got the number. And they're keeping that Ellis Park record intact. What did you think about it, Ronald?
No, you're absolutely right. That's the same same thing I expected from the All Blacks. I thought, we were up against it. I was very reluctant to back the Springboks on Super Brew. I was worried. I thought, geez, the All Blacks, it's the All Blacks, right? I mean, you and I have both been to, Nick, you and I have both been to some huge blowouts, where it hasn't been favorable for the Springboks. And I thought, we're going to be up against it. And the All Blacks brought it. They brought it for, 62 minutes, right? So we were in trouble for a large portion of that game.
So talking about the game now, we're looking at two teams that are sort of in contrast of each other, because the All Blacks are in somewhat of a rebuilding phase with new coaching staff. A lot of your senior players, we're talking like the Whitelocks, not available anymore. Richie Mwenga playing overseas. Is that where we think the fade happened in the 60 minutes? Was it experience or was it the altitude, Dan? Or on the other hand, was it the box advantage of having an experienced squad that helped them take it in the last 20 minutes?
Yeah, I think you've summed it up pretty well there. It's probably all those factors kind of coming in together. Yeah, the bench is probably not as experienced as the Springboks have with their famous bomb squad. And then I think also the use of the subs, a lot of them were only 15 to 10 minutes to go. So they really didn't have a chance to really make that impact. And then two of the subs as well were subbing off Caleb Clark and Will Jordan, who your wingers normally aren't going to make that as much of an impact against the box. So you'd probably want, if you've got a 6-2 split, you get some of those big ball runners in there, which would really kind of keep the pressure on them. So yeah, especially with altitude as well, that's probably where they were starting to fade a little bit there.
So you reckon, Dan, 6-2 split should have been what the All Blacks should have gone for?
I don't know. I've seen it floating around a little bit, a couple of suggestions. It's pretty risky, but I don't know. It's just, I didn't like the taking off both wingers.
Yeah, everyone will think South Africans are very cocky, and you're saying now it feels very risky to go with the 6-2. Let me tell you, Ronnie and I had the same thoughts when Russie went for the 6-2. We were like, there could be problems for us here. And then when he pulled the 7-1 out, we're like, this is going to be an absolute nightmare. Something's going to go wrong. And it really is. It is a hit and a miss with something like that. You take a big chance, it pays off. But sometimes you might end up with, a lock that has to play on wing suddenly.
Yeah, I feel like you guys have gotten pretty lucky. You haven't really been caught out too much. But I know in Super Rugby, the Blues against the Hurricanes, they did a 6-2. And I think they ended up with a back row on the wing for 30-odd minutes and they ended up losing the game. So, I think you guys have gotten pretty lucky so far.
Yeah, absolutely right, Dan. And I've been concerned that has to happen at some stage, right? It's a given that at some point we will get caught out. And we keep talking about Quagga having to play in the back line, and on your guys' side, maybe Artie Sevier and stuff. But what does that actually look like? And, against a team like the All Blacks, do you really want Quagga in the back line?
Yeah, that's it. It can be done, but it's not really. Not really ideal, especially in those tight test matches.
Yeah, I don't want to see Quaka having to try and pace down Will Jordan with a ball in hand. Let me tell you that. I'd much rather have Cheslin or Arendse there for that. But, you know, we're talking about what happened from 60 minutes onwards in the game, but let's just rewind it right to the beginning. So we know the Boks got a 31-27 point win here, but the big controversial talking point from this week is the Bongi Mbonambi try. Now, for those that watched the game or have seen the footage thereafter, there's been a lot of commentary on social media, which I think very rarely helps the topic. It polarizes all the fans. You know, there's some pages coming out and saying it was a try. You know, the ball was ripped. It wasn't a knock-on. My thoughts on it, I think it was a knock-on. I don't think that try should have been awarded. I'm keen to hear your thoughts, Dan.
Yeah, I think, yeah, what, 95% of people, when they saw that on that replay, they thought that was a knock-on. And yeah, everyone's come out now saying, you know, it's ripped, it doesn't count. But I think if you look at it, Geordie's arm is under him. He's kind of still trying to place it onto his arm. Like, whether that's a rip or not, I don't know, it's hard to say. But I think the worst part is just there was no actual review of it. Like, you can, if it's going to be a kind of something like that, you got to have to at least have a couple of replays of it to make sure.
And I think that's probably the biggest issue people have with it, right? If it was reviewed and then they decide, no, it is a try, now then we'd argue a poor decision. The fact that they didn't even take the time to, let's just double check that, because, you know, there's a question mark, at least go up and check it. Yeah, it's unfortunate, really.
So if we agree or disagree that it was not a try, Ronnie, do you think that would have affected the outcome of the game at the end of the day?
Look, I'm wearing my Springbok jersey, so I think we would have found a way to win. But look, a lot of these teams, they're professional teams. They have an ability to reset after, you know, decisions that don't go their way. So I think the All Blacks reset very well, and they were still firing really hard. They still had a number of opportunities to win the game. And I think the team strategies would have changed depending on what was on the scoreboard. So, you know, I'd like to think, and I sort of make myself feel a little bit better about the situation, because I do think that the All Blacks were very unlucky with that try being awarded to Bongi. But just trying to make myself feel a bit better, I think we would have still found a way to win, as ugly as it would have needed to be. It's just unfortunate that we're talking about, you know, that decision. There's a lot of other fantastic things that happened. And
yeah, I think it's also not just as simple as saying, you know, look at the scoreboard, we could deduct points and then it would have been a draw, which is something I've seen a lot of people saying on social media. It's not as simple as that in a game of rugby. You know, scoreboard pressure plays a huge role in the outcome of the game. The decisions that teams take depending on the score, whether to kick for posts, whether to go for touch. So it's quite an intricate thing. But yeah, unfortunately, this is a game of sport as well. Decisions were made. That is the try that was given. But I do agree with you, Dan, that TMO should have gotten involved there. And normally we're saying the TMO is too involved. I feel like on that game on Saturday, the TMO was out having brandy in the back of the stadium.
Flying the aeroplane.
There's an interesting stat that I picked up in prepping for this episode, and I'm keen to get your guys' input on it. And the first is the penalty count in this game, and or not in this game, in the rugby championship so far. The All Blacks are the most penalized team in the competition, averaging 12 penalties a game. The Boks are the least penalized, averaging 9. Now, I mean, that's not much of a difference, but 3 penalties where someone like Sasha is kicking them from 60 meters over can count against you. Do you think that's a problem that's crept into the All Blacks camp, Dan?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a problem at the moment, especially on the weekend. I think the count was, what, 14-5 with penalties, and it's tough to keep yourself in a game when you're giving away that much field possession. Yeah, whether the reason why they're giving away so many penalties, I don't know. Whether it's just the new systems they're trying to kind of bring in and trying to, you know, get used to that gameplay or not, I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely something they're going to have to improve next week, because yeah, you can't be playing these top sides and giving away that many penalties.
Yeah, Ronnie, do you think the Boks, you know, focusing heavily on their discipline to try and win the match officials over again after, you know, the ground we lost in 2021?
Oh, look, I think absolutely. And you said it there. We did lose ground with Rossi's infamous video and some of the rantings he's done over the years. And he's apologized for that. And we've forgiven him. I don't know if the rest of the world has. But it has damaged our image with the refs. And that's been unfortunate. And I think, you know, we've seen it in a number of the documentaries where Rossi and the coaching staff have said, you know, we need to make sure that we're not turning the refs against us. you know, Refcon ran out onto the pitch expecting the Springboks to be dirty and giving away a lot of penalties. We've got to win them over. And I think with the introduction of Jaco Pepe into the coaching staff, that's definitely a focus. Well, I have no doubt that it is. And so the Box will be working hard at trying to be the good, well-behaved boys on the field.
So a stat that plays into the penalty count here, and, you know, there's been a lot of focus from World Rugby side in terms of tackle height, with Rassie coming out a lot and speaking about how much they train the change in tackle height. So I see that the Springboks make only 37% of their tackles chest or higher, and the All Blacks are doing a 48% chest or higher tackle rate. You know, is that a stat you can really read into? I mean, it's the pace of the game, it's the opponents. What do you make of a stat like that?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, I guess. Yeah, what, it's like 10, 15% difference there. So it's hard to know, like, you're breaking down each tackle and looking at, you know, what the level of the tackle height is. So it'd be hard to measure in the first place. But then, yeah, with the speed of the game, I think it's tough to like really change your kind of behaviors that much. But the way, if Rassie's coming out saying this, really focusing on that, that could be something if they're just, you know, completely ruling out those kind of high level tackles.
Yeah, definitely playing into that focus from World Rugby. And again, you know, Jaco Pepe could be heavily involved in something like that as well, and keeping an eye on it during the training sessions. So there was an incident at Ellis Park, which has been controversial all over social media. Guys hurling insults everywhere, guys supporting it, guys against it, been on the radio every single day on my drive to work. And that is the situation that unfolded with the haka this weekend. So for those that watched, you would have noticed that sort of midway through the haka, the DJ decided it's time for Sister Bettina and hoyed that on. Then came the fireworks and the plane. I put out an article where I said, you know, the plane is a mistiming, understandable, you know, it's really bloody hard to get an Airbus timing exactly. But I don't think it was necessary at all to be playing the music or to be setting off the fireworks. I'm curious first from you, Dan, how that was received by you guys.
Yeah, well, when I was watching, I didn't actually notice because I was watching at the pub out in the beer garden. They didn't have the audio loud enough, so we couldn't actually hear the DJ come in. So I was fine. But then after seeing all the uproar on social media, and yeah, it wasn't a good look. But then they've since come out and apologized. So if the apology is true and it was all, you know, an accident and mistiming, then yeah, I guess that's play on. But yeah, if the DJ was purposely playing that music like during the haka, that's not on. Like, if the crowd's going to cheer and like sing on their own accord, I guess that's, you know, their response to the haka. But yeah, the DJ and fireworks and all that stuff, yeah, we don't want that.
You know, Ronnie and I think this was the eighth time I've seen us play the All Blacks now. And you look at that game, every single time I go there, I cannot wait to see the haka. I can't wait to be with the fans facing that with the Boka. It's a privilege to us. But I see so many people on social media saying it's something that should only be done when the All Blacks play at home. I don't know what you think of that, Ronnie. I don't agree with that at all.
No. To me, it's special every single time I get to watch it. And, you know, especially Kapa Opanga when they perform that, that's, you know, an absolute bucket list item that I just can't tick it off every time I see it. You know, I want to see it again and again. And I don't really know what else to say other than I'm disappointed that, you know, the events unfolded the way that they did. You know, I saw it, you know, it's like turning your back on someone that's busy speaking to you mid-sentence. And I wish more people would see it that way. I wish we'd return to a little bit more traditional rugby values, you know, have a bit more respect for the opponent. Look, I think it was definitely a series of mistakes rather than malicious intent on anybody's part. And if it was malicious, yeah, that's ridiculous. And that person should be held to account. But yeah, you know, when we were fortunate enough to go to the World Cup, Nick, you know, we were a little bit disappointed about the fact that we weren't facing the haka. We were actually a little bit behind the haka. So it was, that would have been the only thing that would have made that night even more special for you and I.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan, I'm curious to hear from you what you think of the statement that quite a few people have made that it gives the All Blacks an unfair advantage ahead of kickoff.
Oh, I don't think it does. Like, each team, like, they're professional athletes. Like, they're all, like, they spend that long getting in the zone in the change rooms. They're all fired up. And I've actually heard players come out and say actually it's probably the opposite effect sometimes, because sometimes you get so G'd up from doing the haka that you've then got to level yourself to, you know, play rugby and be controlled. You can't be, if you're the halfback and you're super G'd up and you got to then be controlled and come into the ruck, and you don't want to be like super aggressive. So I don't think it gives them an edge, and each team's open to doing something before the game if they really want. But I think it's all good.
And look, Dan, I don't think it's just, you know, if anybody says that it geez the All Blacks up, you know, it could do the same if I was to face the haka. I mean, if somebody performed the kapo banga to me, I wouldn't be able to play the game. I'd run through the stadium walls, you know, on my way home. The adrenaline would be a bit too much for me. It's the most incredible thing ever.
Yeah, so it works for both sides, really. And it's just something that's so unique to rugby that you got to embrace it. Like, people are saying to get rid of it out of the game. I'm like, God, it's something iconic for the All Blacks in rugby and as a whole. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it extends. It's iconic for all of us in rugby. I mean, think back to the moment in 1995 with Jonah Lomu coming forward to the Springboks and Kobus Visa breaking ranks to stand in front of James Small. And that's the Springboks meeting the challenge. It's happened time and time again. Think of you guys facing England and how England got their formation. You know, it's such a key element and such an integral part of the game. I really, really can't disagree more with the people calling for it not to be there anymore. Guys, let's go over then quickly to Argentina, where the Wallabies got, should I call it a surprise win over Los Pumas? A surprise if you look at everyone's picks on Superbrew, at least. And 19 points to Los Pumas, 20 for the Wallabies. What did you make of that game, Ronnie?
I'm super proud of the Wallabies. Did not expect that to happen. It's very difficult to go over to Argentina and to pull off a win there. That's, you know, that's an incredible feat. And then the great equalizer, the rain came down, and you know, it's horrible conditions. And I felt really sorry for Augustine Creevy, but bloody well done to the Wallabies. They fronted up, their forwards were spectacular. You know, Tizana, honestly, that's, I wish I was playing fantasy rugby again, he'd definitely be in my team week in, week out.
Yeah, what do you make of the win for the Wallabies? Is it, you know, signs of Joe Schmidt's impressions on the team? Was it just that they, you know, Argentina, we've spoken about on the show, are quite an emotional side and maybe didn't rise to the occasion? And what did you make of it, Dan?
Yeah, it was a pretty gutsy victory, and it's pretty non-Wallabies in recent years when they're normally losing it in those final minutes. Because I think last year Argentina beat them in like the 79th or 80th minute. So yeah, it was nice to see the kind of tables turn and the Wallabies get the win late in the game. But I think they're building nicely, and just Joe Schmidt's influence is coming in. They had like a lot of changes. They had Hamish Stewart on debut, and then Harry Wilson, his first start as captain. They did well to, I think they just rose to the challenge, and they're really buying into what they're doing, and they're trying to build up from there, I think. And nice having a good stable coach behind them as well, not someone like Mr. Eddie, who's just kind of changing things week to week. And I think they're a good place. See how they go against the All Blacks, but they're coming along.
Yeah, I definitely think they are. And I mean, like you say, Joe Schmidt is currently casting the net quite wide. The Wallabies have had 15 debuts this year so far. So, you know, he's testing out the squad. He's checking which players are available, which players are able to make the step up, because he has to. He really has to start from scratch and build this Wallabies side up, get them a reputation again. And, you know, we're seeing young players really coming through. Like Ronnie mentioned, Carlo Tizano, he's made 57 out of 57 tackles in the Rugby Championship so far. An absolute machine for them. It actually feels like this season is the year of the flanker, because, you know, you've got Tizano, you've got Peter Steph Tatoy, and then you've got Ethan Blackadder, and those are three players I can talk about till the sun goes down. You know, they're really, really showing off in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, guys, Gus Creevy, Ronnie's good old mate, I hope you've popped him a message and set up a briar there, Ronnie, to bow him out of the game. But I think, yeah, what a player for the Los Pumas over the years, debuting at flank way back when, coming on to
2005.
And then coming on and only getting 10 minutes was a bit disappointing. I would have loved to have seen him get a start in that one, but not to be. And cheers, Gus. Thank you for what you've given to the game.
Yeah. Great player.
Boys, we are going to play a little bit of a game now, a bit of blind rankings here. So I've got 6 All Blacks players and 6 Springbok players. I'm going to give them to you in a random order, and you're going to have to tell me where they rank from 1 to 6 on your list. All right. So Dan, you're going to be answering on the Springboks. I think let's start with you and see what you're going to do here. So let's go first with Lucanyo Am.
Lucanyo Am, let's go 4th. It's hard to know what's coming. Give me some grades.
Then I'm going to give you Skulk Burger.
Oh, geez, he'd be up there, eh? Maybe 2.
All right. So we've got Skulk at 2. I'm at 4. Let's see where you're going to place Vili LaRue.
Vili LaRue. Oh, do we go above that? Let's go 3.
Yeah, the spots are getting filled here quickly.
Shit, this is dangerous now. I got 1 and 5.
Eben Etzebeth.
Oh boy. Yeah, we'll just chuck him a 1 and hope you've given me an absolute donkey for number 5.
Then let's throw in a Farid Dupria.
I guess he's got to go 5.
So it feels like choice has been taken away for you for the last one here. But where are we fitting in Bucky's Buerta?
Oh, wait, I've got... Oh, shit, I thought it was 5, wasn't it? I've got 6. I guess Bucky's at 6. I butchered this. I watched a few people do these and they always don't go too well. And I've seen why. Very tough.
Let's just hope Bucky's doesn't see this list, hey, Dan.
The scary man put 6. Glad to check my votes.
Ronnie, so you've seen how Dan has done. How are you ready to fare here with some of the All Blacks? I've got some interesting names here for you. Should we start you off?
Good.
Let's see. Okay. Where are we placing Piri Weepu?
Because he's probably one of the nicest players I've ever met in my life. I'm going to put him 3rd.
3rd?
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we placing Mills Muliaina?
I enjoy him on the breakdown, but it's going to go 4th because I know there's some legends. There have to be some real, absolute legends coming.
Bowden Barrett?
2nd.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Let's see where you're putting Dan Carter.
First place.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw you a curveball there. What about Jonah Lomu?
This is controversial. I'm going to put him in last place, 6th place.
Sure. That is a hectic call. And then I think you're expecting me to give you Richie McCaw, but I'm not going to do that. What about Wyatt Crockett?
Well, what do I have left now? What position do I have left open?
5.
Well, Wyatt Crockett. Can I swap Wyatt Crockett and Jonah Lomu?
No, unfortunately, it's too late.
Jeez. Who puts Jonah 6 with 1, 2 guesses left?
Yeah, I think... All right, guys. Well, those were definitely some interesting choices. But a long-running debate on this show, Ronnie, which we have not yet asked Dan, is for his input on where should Bowden Barrett be playing? Should he be at 10 or should he be at 15?
This is a tough one. I really thought they were going to shift Will Jordan to 15 and then keep Bodie as that 10 reserve, whether he could come on at 10 or 15. His best position, I feel like he's been playing his best position 15. Well, D-Mac's had most of the time at 10. So, yeah, I'd like to see D-Mac and Bodie kind of share or like battle it out for the 10 jersey, and then you give Will Jordan the 15 jersey. That's how I'd like to see it go down.
You know, you're absolutely correct. That's the only right answer. And I'm glad you said that too.
As you could probably guess, I was more for Bodie at 10 here. But Ronnie.
Look, the reality is you want someone like Bowden Barrett with an extra 2nd or 2 on the ball, especially on, you know, you can spot the gaps and you can hit that space really well. But if you see what the All Blacks did against Box now is they moved D-Mac into that 2nd receiver position, and you saw Jordy often be the 1st receiver. So that did give D-Mac an extra 2nd or 2 on the ball. And if you actually sat Bodie in there, I'd be perfectly happy with that. I think Bowden just needs that extra bit of space, an extra bit of time on the ball.
Yeah, the man has wheels, that's for sure. So let's take a look then at this weekend's game, guys. So that kickoff is at 5 p.m. at DHL Stadium in Greenpoint, Cape Town. I'm flipping excited. I'm flying down to Cape Town on Saturday morning to go and watch the game. It's going to be a cracker. I'll represent you lads there. I'll shout much harder for the Springboks though, Dan, unfortunately. But And guys, you must go and check this out on Instagram on Dan's page, Shortball Rugby. You put up some graphics there, you know, reminding us nicely that we only last won in Cape Town in 2005. So not a happy hunting ground for the Springboks down there. Ronnie and I were there in 2017 when we lost to you guys at Newlands back then. Going to be a tough fixture, this one. And I fear we've given the All Blacks more motivation with all the chaos around the haka. So what are you expecting from this weekend, Dan?
Yeah, they're definitely going to come out firing. Like they were came out firing last week. And I think they'll be hurting after that one because they knew they had the win there and then losing it at the end. And the All Blacks, they always bounce back after a loss. And so I reckon they're down backing them to come through this one. Altitude's going to be less. Well, there's no altitude there, right? And then fair few All Blacks fans are here as well. So that'll help hopefully get the boys over the line.
Yeah, it actually blew my mind the last time how many All Blacks fans there were when we went to Cape Town for that test. It was a little bit ridiculous. So I think they're going to be well supported, like you say. What about you, Ronnie? What are you expecting out of this weekend?
I mean, Dan said it right. They bounce back that second test match always. It's very difficult to get two over the All Blacks in quick succession. And, you know, if we go back to 2022, we beat them in Mbombela and they, you know, they pulled out everything and beat us at Ellis Park the following week. So it's a big ask for the Springboks to do it back to back. And, but I'm going to back, you know, and the reason is because we haven't won the bloody Freedom Cup in 15 years. And hopefully Russie's G'd them up a bit in the, this week. We need to win that. We need to win that Freedom Cup because it's a lot harder to win that than it is the Rugby Championship.
Man, and apparently, you guys don't care about the Freedom Cup. I put up a post on that saying how many times we won it, and the South Africans have been coming for me. My comments have been filled.
No, we absolutely do.
No one even knows what this is. Blah 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 blah. So
it's literally our trophy. It's literally our trophy, but it's called the Freedom Cup. It's called the Freedom Cup because of. It's our trophy. We need it back now. That's the reality. And anybody that says it's not important, it's just because we haven't won it.
You gotta start replying to some of my comments then, because they're nonstop.
Yeah, no, I agree with Ronnie. And at my office, it's been the talk about getting the Freedom Cup back. You know, we want that flipping badly because it takes two victories to get it now. So we bloody well want that thing back. And we're currently celebrating 30 years of freedom in South Africa. So come on, we need that cup to come home this weekend. I hope Russie's been motivating the boys for that one. But that being said, another stat about this fixture, the All Blacks' last loss three in a row was also to the Springboks in 2009. But four in a row, we have to go all the way back to 1976 to 1978, where you guys lost four in a row to us. It's a tough ask to get four wins over the All Blacks, hey, Ronald?
Yeah. And that just shows the quality of the All Blacks, right? So, you know, they're going through a bit of a dip at the moment, and it's really a dip only by their own standards, right? So a lot of the international sides would still be, you know, would be very happy with the state of their rugby if they were playing like the All Blacks are, you know, at the moment. So it's a quality side. It's very difficult to do it back-to-back. And we, you know, like you said, we can't, you know, stringing together back-to-back wins over the All Blacks, it's not a regular thing.
You know, it's professional sport. You mentioned that earlier, Dan. Do you think these records are something the players ever take into mind before going out to a game? I mean, I can imagine them talking about it, you know, we can't allow this to be the fourth one, but I don't imagine the other stats bother them much.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that because every press conference, whenever there's, you know, a notable stat, the journalists will ask them, like, oh no, we don't touch on that. Even when it's like Eden Park and they've won their 50 games in a row, or they haven't been winning in Wellington, they're like, oh, do you talk about that? And they're like, no, we don't even mention it. But I feel like if you're winning 50 games in a row in Eden Park and then, you know, losing in Wellington, you got to start talking about that. So I reckon there'd be some stuff they touch on and some of that they'd use to kind of fire themselves up. You know, they don't want to be making any negative records, or if they want to be, you know, pushing records, then, you know, gives you a bit of extra motivation. So yeah, it's just a little bit of extra motivation, I'd say, sometimes.
Yeah, before we move on and just talking about that stat, you know, 50 wins on the trot at Eden Park for the All Blacks, isn't it hilarious that the other All Black fortress is over in Scotland, you know, having won 18 straight games there or whatever the stat was there. That is amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when that graphic popped up on the screen. I ended up, taking a photo of it and I put it up on my page and everyone was just like, this is just outrageous. Like, their fortress is in Scotland. Like, it's a funny one.
I didn't even see that until now. That's unbelievable, actually.
Yeah.
Shit, no, there's... Yes, I mean, you can go through stats and comb through stats to make anything we try and say, you know, make sense. You can paint it up in any way. So I do think they pay some attention to it, but I don't think it's got an overriding sort of influence in the changing room, if you will. I'm curious, Dan, before we get onto the BOC 23, what changes would you make, if any, to the All Blacks 23 that the duty in Ellis Park?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see too many changes. I think, pretty much the whole team played pretty well. I don't think there was any injuries either. So I think they'll, remain pretty settled with the team lineup. Whether they'll keep Mark Talley as the back reserve or not, I don't know. Because you got Anton Leonard-Brown, who's pretty versatile as well, and you got Rico in the centers. So, yeah, it's hard to know if they're going to make any changes. But, yeah, I can't imagine too many now.
What are the chances of us getting a 6-2 from you guys?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like if they did it in South Africa, it would just be like kind of giving in to the, the Bok way. They'd just be like, oh, we don't want to give into Rassie's tactics, especially after losing one to them. But yeah, you never know. I just think it's unlikely, especially when Razor's not really his thing to do a 6-2, I don't think.
No, fair enough. So Rassie, for the first time since we've been covering the Springboks, has changed his team naming from Tuesday to Thursday. Now, that could be in response to some of the backlash he got last week for the change with Eobin, or it could absolutely just be Rassie antics. It looks like Siakalisi is going to be available for this fixture. He was pictured out on the training field today, and suddenly it doesn't look like he has a fractured cheekbone. The swelling seems to have disappeared, so I don't know what they're doing down in Cape Town, but looking good. And I'm curious, Ronnie, what changes would you make to the BOC 23?
Look, I think it's difficult. I haven't really thought about it. I wouldn't make too many changes to the forward pack. Maybe Marco van Staden coming in and getting a little bit of game time is needed. Ben Jason Dixon is obviously a very powerful unit, but he's still very inexperienced. So Marco van Staden would be a good substitution in there. There is a bit of a question mark. I still believe around Sierra. We're going to find out tomorrow what the team is. I wouldn't make too many changes to the forwards. In the back line, there's obviously the rumor Kane and Moody's being pictured training a bit. Lukanya was at a press conference. So I think we can expect Lukanya maybe back in the picture. A little bit concerned about where Fassi still fits in. Although I think he had a great game. Although he went off, got a yellow card early in last week's match, I still think he had an exceptional game. So not too many changes, but, we can't really say that because we know Rassie's going to make changes. We know that's Rassie's modus operandi. So, yeah, he's just going to mix things up. He's going to give new guys experience, or he's going to give other people a run. He's going to change the tactics a bit, and we can make as many predictions as we want. We're going to be wrong.
Yeah, I think from my side, I mean, obviously we've got an injury-enforced change coming on the left wing with Kurtley Arendse out. I'm expecting Mapimpi to get the start there. But with Rassie, you really never know. Is he going to, chuck a full set of changes out here and put Lukanya on? Is he going to switch up the loose trio? Or is he going to say, this is our chance to win the Freedom Cup, to win the Rugby Championship. Let's go full tilt. Let's back the team that did duty. I'm expecting Vili to start at 15, and I'm also expecting Hundre to start at 10. I know there's going to be outcry if Sasha gets taken down to the bench, but I think that must be understood in context of the Springbok team, where Rassie really has blurred the line between what a starter is and what a player on the bench is. So I wouldn't see that as a demotion for Sasha. I just think, rotating the squad, keeping everyone match fit, Pollard gets the start in this one, and especially for some crucial kicks. Although Sasha slotting them from 60 makes one hell of a case for him as well. Are we going to do the tough thing here, boys, and try and make predictions for this week, or are we not going to jinx this one?
No, we've already said who we think's going to win, right? I mean, Dan's backing his side, we're backing our side. But I don't want to go so far as to say by how much.
What about you, Dan?
Go All Blacks by 7.
All Blacks by 7.
Well, no, he's arrogant.
Well, if Dan's putting it out there, I'm going to say Springboks by two. I'm going to be shouting for them in the stands. And, you know, the boys are going to do it. I've had a chat there with Urban. He's fired up and he's ready for you guys. Then let's just take a glance over at the Los Pumas versus Wallabies game. So that's a 9 p.m. kickoff if you're in South Africa. You know, we've spoken about it. Los Pumas are a good side, but they're a heavily emotional side, a lot like the old French teams, you know, where the motivation comes from their emotions and the ability to win those tight games. Are we going to see them turn it around now in the second fixture, Dan? Or do you think the Wallabies are going to build on that win that they got there last weekend?
Yeah, I think you've summed up Argentina well. Like, you saw how they played in New Zealand where they beat the All Blacks in Wellington, and then the next week they get pumped in Park. So, yeah, it depends on the day, but they've got it in them to easily. They should be able to beat the Wallabies in the current way. But the Wallabies are building as well, so yeah, that one's a tough one to predict.
If you had to pick a score, who's taking it?
Oh, let's go Argentina to bounce back, win by three.
Ronald, what about you? Have Los Pumas got this, or are we seeing a Wallabies win?
Oh, no, my weekly chat with Augustine Creevy, he just said, you know, the Pumas, the Los Pumas want to become the Win Pumas again. So, you know, they're going to win, and they're going to do so comfortably as long as the rain stays away.
I'm going to go then the opposite of you two, and I'm going to back the Wallabies for a 7-point win in this one. I would love to see them build on that momentum, especially ahead of facing the All Blacks. I'd like to see the Bledisloe be a bit more of a contest this year. And I think a second win in Argentina would go a long way to helping that squad's confidence.
Yeah, they definitely need it to start getting some momentum back into rugby in Australia. It's been a bit of a sad state the last couple of years, and especially this year losing the Melbourne Rebels. They're not going to be in the competition next year in Super Rugby. So, yeah, the more wins are better, really. So hopefully they can win. But, yeah, I was thinking Argentina might be too good.
Stressing it all for the Bledisloe, Dan.
Hopefully they don't get too good by that stage.
There we go. Well, guys, then lastly for this week, we just need to go over the May Fokchom moment of the week. It was very closely won by Jordy Barrett with that intercept try off the consistent battering ram of Sia up the middle. Jordy read that to perfection and paced away for a try there. I'm sure the Springboks won't be running that move again this weekend. But I'm going to give the May Fokchom moment of the week to Grant Williams for his match-winning try in the 74th minute. Young scrum off in the squad, and I would love to see him actually get a start this weekend and bring his pace to the game. He's quite literally been waiting in the wings at times. So yeah, I would be lucky to see him get a run. So that's the May Fokchom moment of the week. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. May Fokchom, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.